Oh, hey, welcome back to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Podcast. I am a rogue host. I am not who you're expecting. This is not Liz. This is not Matt. This is merely Andy Behrens coming to you, and I am excited because we have an episode today in which we have reunited the old Fantasy Football Live injury squad. Everybody is back together. This is going to be really fun. I think it's going to be fun. It's going to be informative, certainly. We are joined by, like by far, by orders of magnitude, the two most distinguished and thoroughly educated people to appear on the Yahoo Fantasy platform, I would say, ever. This is Dr. Gregory Horner, orthopedic surgeon with Tri-Valley Orthopedic Specialists. He is a former Northwestern University football player, so he's got that angle covered. And we're joined by Dr. Sarah Edwards, an orthopedic surgeon and sports medicine specialist. She is with UCSF Ortho. She has also served as a team physician across multiple sports for multiple schools. So this should be an interesting conversation. First of all, both of you, how have you been? It's been a minute.
Well, it's been good on my side. I know Sarah's doing well. We talk periodically, but it's good to see you again, Andy.
Yeah, it's great to see you, Andy. Thanks for having us on.
So I just want to warn listeners right here at the top, this is not the podcast where we're going to have a bunch of player-specific fantasy discussions, right? There are no sleepers here. I'm not going to give you anybody to fade or target on this episode. These doctors cannot tell you who specifically is going to injure what ligament in whichever week of the season. They are doctors. They are not visitors from the future. It's not what we're doing here. If you are not, for whatever reason, interested in a general conversation on the weird amount, the elevated injury risk in the season ahead in the time of COVID, then you can probably tap out right now because I have warned you. This is, again, there's not going to be a list of players at any point in this pod. That's not how this one is going to work. We are just absolutely not in a normal NFL offseason. We've had virtual OTAs. We've had teams meeting with players via Zoom and Skype, and the Hall of Fame game already canceled. The preseason is probably going to be truncated. It's not since the lockout, which was 9 years ago, have players been more, I would say, disconnected from their teams during offseason training as they are right now. My lingering memory from the lockout, from the days immediately after the 2011 lockout, is that as soon as we returned to camp, a lot of people suffered serious injuries. Fantasy players will probably remember that Mikel LeShore suffered an AC, or not an ACL, but an Achilles tear almost right away. In fact, we had a dozen Achilles injuries in the first 3 weeks of training camp, which is like a full season's worth of that injury in the first 3 weeks. So I guess the first question I just want to throw out there for you guys, and again, this has been a different offseason than that one, but you know, it's probably the closest comp. Is it reasonable to expect that we are going to see another huge wave of injuries right away off the fact that we've just not had normal training buildups for each of these players? I'll start with Dr. Edwards.
Thanks, Andy. Yes, I do think it's completely expected. It's being talked about in the sports medicine world now, from everything from baseball to football, every sport that's kind of had this long pause that the athletes aren't used to, are anticipating an increase in Tommy John injuries for baseball. Definitely in football, an increase in Achilles, hamstring, ACL tears. Those have been shown to be, you know, problems if people aren't conditioned at a nice, slow, even rate. So I think, yes, people are anticipating it and expecting it and trying to think of ways to help prevent it.
Dr. Horner, I assume that you concur?
Yeah, no, I totally concur. I think we're going to see some injuries. It probably will be similar to 2011. And what's interesting about 2011 is it was not actually evenly spread, those 12 injuries. It was mostly in the much younger athletes. The average experience for those who had an ACL injury in 2011 was a year and like 1.5 years, whereas the average in general is around 6 years. It's usually the more senior athletes who get these injuries because it's more of a degenerative injury. But for the younger players, especially this year, because they're, you know, in the lockdown, depending on where they are in the country, they might not be out as much. It's probably harder to get the training in. And then a lot of them, the younger folks, they just don't understand what they're about to go through. This is their first year in the NFL. The older guys are thinking about that. They're preparing for it. And so those younger injuries are the ones we can expect to see.
Yeah, that's interesting that you would point that out. I think Mikel LeSueur, which is, again, the one that I remember from the time, was a really young player, either coming into his first or second season back then. It is interesting to, it's speculative, but it's interesting to think of that in terms of the players who've been around the block a little bit. You've played 5 years in the league, 6 years in the league. You know how to get yourself ready for a full season. You know what an off, you know that you're still at work during the off season. I assume you're 20, 21, 22 years old. You think of yourself as just absolutely invulnerable to that sort of injury, that sort of catastrophic injury. I'm wondering, can you just sort of describe the importance of a normal slow buildup in training, specifically in football? You yourself have been through it as a player, Dr. Edwards. Of course, you've been through it as a team physician. What is the summer and spring supposed to look like as they get ready to go full speed and go full contact?
Well, you know, that's what's interesting. You hear these voluntary workouts, you know, so, most of my experience is at the college level, but, you know, they're working out. They really maybe get 2 weeks off at the end of school to go home and be with their families. And they're back early June for voluntary workouts. These are not mandatory, but, you know, most of the team will be back. They have a nice slow ramp up, sometimes not so slow. Sometimes, depending on their strength coach, strength and conditioning program, it's pretty intense, the ramp up. But, you know, there's a good 3 month or 2 month lead up until they start official camp. And that's really going to be minimized this season. You know, they're not going to have that nice slow workout. I know, you know, some of the pro teams back now, NBA, you know, they're trying to do it. NHL is having voluntary workouts. I was speaking to a colleague who's an NHL physician yesterday, and he said maybe half the guys have come back for voluntary workouts. That's unusual too. Normally you have 100% participation, even though they are quote unquote voluntary. They're not all coming back right now because of COVID and sometimes based on where they live or the restrictions. So, you know, even at the professional level, you're not seeing that kind of buy-in like they're used to. It's going to be an issue.
Dr. Horner, what do you think what are the things that a responsible team would have been doing over the past 3 months or so to mitigate injury risk in camps?
You know, Andy, I was thinking that same question right before you asked. What would you do? You're in a situation that's never happened before. Even the infectious disease doctors have been completely caught off guard by this entire thing.
Yeah.
And it's all happening right around the time when football players have to start preparing and start their gradual buildup. So I think that you know, each team has, physiologists and when I say physios, I mean like the physical therapists, the trainers, and the folks who are supposed to be working on building up your muscle balance, and game timing of your muscles as it pertains to reaction time. And that plays a big role because your tendons have a tendency to build up their strength in a manner that lags behind muscle strength. So you build up your muscle strength and gradually build up that tendon strength as well. If that isn't done properly, I believe that it does increase your risk of tendon injuries. But I have to be honest with you, I don't think that anyone can truly prepare because each individual athlete's situation under a shelter-in situation may vary. And you don't know what's at their disposal for training, who they can work with, who they can get close to while they're training. There's so many variables that I'm not sure that you can predictably anticipate that they'll all be ready.
I reached out to some sports, some of the higher level collegiate strength coaches I know. And that was all over the board. Some said, you know, I can get them ready to play in 2 weeks. All I need is 2 weeks. Wow. And other people are saying that was one. The others were saying, you know, oh, I need 6 to 8 weeks to really ramp them up to get them ready for camp. You know, so I think that was the more consistent thing that I heard was a 6 to 8 week ramp up. It seems like on the NFL level, they are communicating with them via Skype, encouraging the workouts. But again, unless they are injured, they have been kept away from their facilities that they're used to. So it's been really, it's going to be interesting. I have heard in the news about some of the guys are training together, you know, and then there's been COVID outbreaks within those small yes. training pods, which is, you know, so I think some of the, I think it was some of the Tennessee Titans maybe were training together in an off campus facility. And they, you know, there was an outbreak amongst them. So it's, they're trying to train together.
Huh. Yeah. This would get us into a COVID conversation a little bit, but I think Tom Brady's little training group is probably the most well-recognized. He's made a lot of news for bringing players together. The NFLPA itself doesn't seem entirely thrilled necessarily by the level of the lack of distancing, perhaps in that training group, and some of the pronouncements that Brady himself seems to have made on social media. Should we feel worried about that? Should we feel good about their dedication to craft, or just more than anything concerned about safety and distancing right now?
You know, personally, I think that what happens, I mean, these are young, healthy people, right? So if they become COVID positive, there is a very high likelihood that they'll be asymptomatic, like the vast majority of professional athletes who have come out. They have so much functional reserve that they seem to show very little symptoms. So what's happening this far out probably isn't going to make a huge difference, maybe even be beneficial if they get exposed, because they're going to have the antibodies, maybe, if the antibodies happen to confer immunity, as we kind of hypothesize that they do. But as we get closer to the season, that's going to play a big role, right? Because if you become positive in the middle of the season, you know, A, you could be infected. The whole team could be taken out, and certainly your position. And that's going to cause some serious possibility of asterisks during this season.
I've been reading about this, the intensity of the contact tracing that is going to happen this season is unlike anything we've ever seen in sports medicine. So just reading what they are planning to do to help prevent these outbreaks, it's unbelievable. From a sports medicine perspective, it's Herculean, you know, it's such an effort to make this happen. And it's pretty impressive to see all the people coming together to really try to make it happen. And I agree with Greg Horner here that, you know, luckily, you know, these guys are elite athletes. And if they become positive, the chance of them having a really negative outcome, I believe, is low. I am worried about the support staff probably more than the athletes. You know, you've got some of the coaches with comorbidities and their family members and the people around the team. The owners should be worried. You know, most of them are over the age of 50. So that's going to be a higher risk probably than the actual athletes. Although there is still a risk. We know that it's not all young people are immune. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. I do feel good that they are taking extreme measures to protect them. The expense of it is unbelievable, you know, and you can see where, the demand is, you know, to have football and to have pro sports this year, but they are really doing, I think, a good job at trying to minimize problems.
Yeah, I think I'm impressed at the effort as well. But in the end analysis, when you're playing a contact sport, and I won't get into the personal hygiene on the field, it gets pretty challenging not to exchange virus load. If someone on the field has the virus, the odds of someone else getting it from them is very, very high. I can't imagine. I saw this this helmet. I mean, Andy, what this helmet that the Bears actually have, it looks like some kind of like deep sea diving / motorcycle gear. I don't know if they could even produce enough of those to play for a whole day. But I mean, can that really be what we're going to see this year? I mean, what are we? are they working that hard?
Yeah. So I was going to ask you guys about this, whether, some sort of scenario in the NFL where everybody is just decked out in one of those LaDainian Tomlinson face shields, like, is that enough? Like, is it even possible to take enough precaution? Like, we've already seen, if we start to look at different sports, there's been this disastrous tennis tournament, the thing with Novak Djokovic, like the world's best tennis player, right. The whole tournament disregarded, as far as I understand, they did almost everything wrong. Like, if you wanted to design a sports event that failed to take every necessary precaution and didn't adhere to social distancing or any of the protocols that I think professionals agree we should, it failed in a huge way. And he's now COVID positive, and others who attended the tournament are COVID positive. They partied at a nightclub. Like, it was an unbelievable display of negligence. We've seen that, and then we have what the NBA is doing, which is remarkable. If they actually pull this off and put everybody in a bubble, like 22 teams in a bubble for an extended period of time. But even then, like, maybe that's not workable for the NFL, because the NFL is, rosters are four times as large as what we see in the NBA. Coaching staffs are larger. Everything is larger. Even if you wanted to put the NFL in a bubble, what the NBA is doing is they're putting everybody there to begin with, and then the playoffs start almost immediately. So people are leaving the bubble constantly, and it's going to get smaller and smaller, and they're just going to have a smaller population than we would see in the NFL. But is that the safest way to do it? Like, what the NFL is talking about doing, where not only are we playing in stadiums across the country, but apparently different cities, different teams are going to default to, like, whatever the local community standard is for fan attendance and such. That to me seems a little risky. I was wondering your thoughts on that generally.
Aren't the Bears planning on having fans? I mean, they remain optimistic, and I think the word was confident that they're going to have fans in the stands.
The NFL generally is projecting a great deal of confidence right now, which is perhaps they should
in general. But how do you play football without touching your face periodically? To me, it seems like it's, once again, there's no precautions you can put in place that can prevent a high likelihood of communicability on the field. Hand sanitizer is going to be critically important. They've gone over the top. And I actually had a conversation with Mark Tatum about the NBA a couple weeks ago. And they have like a 112-page medical document that it goes into so much detail. The planning that went into the NBA season is incredible. And they have the ability to create a bubble. The NBA doesn't have that possibility. Take, for example, the fact that right now, Florida, California, Texas, and Arizona are having massively rising numbers. We had 48,000 people positive in Friday or so. That's not really happening in some other states, right? So there's going to be this big disparity in the risk that each team is facing. It's handicapping them, right? So, Sarah, what do you think? I mean, do you think that there's going to be some differential risk that each team is facing?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, absolutely, depending on their conference and where they're playing most of their games. And if they're in a hot spot or not, I wouldn't want to be playing for the Arizona Cardinals right now, or in Texas in any city, So I think we all want there to be football and want them to be healthy, but it's a risk. It's a huge risk. We're rolling the dice. Clearly people are going to get sick along the way. So there's a measured risk that they're taking, and that the athletes are taking, to continue the sport right now. Some politicians, I think, would say, at least in California, our governor for a while was saying there will not be football this fall in California. Now he's reversed that. Now he's like, well, maybe we're going to have football. It seems like there's been a big shift in the mental thinking between May and June. And now, of course, all the college kids are back doing voluntary workouts, and they're making progress to proceed. I have heard that the NFL has not decided on their, they're still trying to figure out the fine details. The NBA again, I have their document. I was looking at their documents. They're really on it. And again, they have a much smaller cohort of players they have to control. The NHL is really on it. Again, a 32-person roster as opposed to, you know, 52 on the team. And they're going to have a very shortened season having the bubble concept. The NFL still has a lot of kinks to work out. And I think it's changing. I mean, what we think is happening today may not be happening in mid-July. You know, they might have to adapt. So that's what's scary about, you know, what's happening. And I'm sure they're feeling that too. Well, we think it's going to be this way, but maybe it's going to change. So particularly depending on the locales. I mean, if those southern states get as bad as the epidemiologists and physicians think they're going to get, and you have an overload and it's like New York in April, you know, happening in multiple states, there's going to be a pause button. So that's where we don't, there's a lot unknown. I hope it happens. I'm hopeful.
So Dr. Edwards, you work closely with both a football team, a fall outdoor sport, and a hoops team, a winter indoor sport. What sort of differences when you talk about precautions, like with each of these coaches, with athletic directors, what are the sort of differences that you're talking about in terms of how a locker room should look, how practices should look, what game days are going to look like?
It's a huge challenge. It's an absolutely huge challenge. And again, you have to understand we're coming from the Bay Area where we're still technically, Andy, under a shelter in place lockdown here. So we are technically, I think Greg, Dr. Horner and I are both Bay Area physicians, and we are still not supposed to be in a group of over six people, you know, so, or 12 people, 12 is our limit. So you can imagine a practice for football is really hard to imagine. So one of the teams I'm advising now, we are literally having a weekly call where it's changing every week. And a lot of it is based on our local public health advisors. And what I will say is it's extremely frustrating for the coaching staff who's in a conference where the other teams that they're going to be playing are in an area where they can practice freely and have larger groups. Sure. You know, there's such a disparity in what's allowed by the teams across the country. There's some parts of the country, like the little league teams are back. They've got high school football starting in Kansas. You know, we're here, you know, we again can't have a group of kids over 12 in the same area. So they're really struggling on how to let people proceed and practice following the local health guidelines. So it's a challenge. It's extremely challenging. I think locker room sanitation is huge. They're having even training room. Normally the training rooms are kind of mobbed after practice. And now we're talking about limiting training room capacity to four kids at a time. And they have to have set appointments. Normally it's just an in and out, very easy flow. They're talking about having people stop showering in the locker rooms, that they have to do all that at homes. Which is, Greg's thinking about that. I mean, you know, everybody showers in football or basketball, you know, after their thing, but they're to decrease hygiene issues and spread of germs. Well, you're not going to do that at the school anymore. You're going to do that at home. So there's a lot of different changes. And then of course, there's the same PPE that's needed for the medical staff and potentially the coaching staff. So the personal protective equipment, things like masks, gloves, hand sanitizer, bleach wipes. You know, it's just as hard for the athletic teams to get the bleach wipes than it is for you if you go to Costco or wherever you're buying them at Target. It's impossible to get paper towels and Clorox, you know. It's the same issue for sports teams trying to get it because you're competing with the hospitals. It has to go to the hospitals first and the medical clinics. So
I don't know. Something tells me the NFL will get whatever they need.
Right.
Yeah. They seem abundance. To have a magical power, but you know, when you can't get it as a physician for your office, you know, it's hard to, you know, figure it out. So there has been an effort to get PPE for those schools, you know, and to get the cleaning supplies they need.
Is testing going to have to take place every day? Is it going to take place every 3 days, every week? What's the...
Depends on the level.
A lot of these schools don't have the resources that, you know, the NFL can print its own money, whatever, and I'm sure it's fine, but not all these schools can do so.
Absolutely not. They do not have the resources. There will be, at some level, a screening check of symptoms is going to occur. So a temperature check, they can test their pulse ox. So you can test, you know, one of the earliest signs of COVID before people know they have it is that their oxygen saturation will decrease. So if you test their finger, you don't even have to prick it. You just put a little machine on there and it'll tell you how you're oxygenating your lungs. And you should be between 98 to 100% all the time. And people with COVID are walking around at 80%, 50%. They're walking around. It's very odd to us doctors because that normally if you were sitting there at 80%, you would feel very sick and be symptomatic. For some reason with COVID, they don't realize that they're that short, that their oxygen levels are that low until they're very, very far gone. So that's one way they're going to screen. They're going to do temperature checks, symptom checks, and then also oxygen checks on them daily. As far as the actual testing, that's very hard to do. So I know at the professional level, the NHL and the NBA are planning on every other day testing. My sources that are NFL physicians say they are potentially going to test every day. That's at a cost of about $5 million to each team. Okay. Mm. So this is big money, you know, and this is not money that like a junior college team has to spend. This is not money that even a normal NC2A, even a big school probably has to spend. Even Alabama may not have, I mean, maybe Alabama does, but you know, school, most college, you know, football programs don't have that kind of money to do that daily that daily COVID testing, the PCR testing. But they will be just doing probably routine screening. I know the kids coming in are getting COVID tests. So if they're coming in from outside, the college kids, they are getting tested. This is at Division I level. They're getting tested upon arrival at campus, and then they're being made to quarantine for 48 hours until that test comes back. And then they're being allowed to join their population. And then from what I understand is then they're just doing daily screening with the athletic trainers where they're getting their symptom checks, but they're not having the PCR done like this, like the pros will.
Yeah. Actually, my father-in-law is an infectious disease doctor, and he's been treating a lot of patients with COVID. And what they're finding is that if you do develop the symptoms and the pneumonia, it causes permanent damage to your lungs. It's not the same as the flu. Not only that, but there's a diffuse coagulopathy that occurs, and that leads to significant injuries to your heart, kidneys, even your brain, strokes. The stroke rate, there is a stroke rate with the flu, but with the COVID-19, it's far higher. In fact, the first person that we know of dying from COVID-19 in the Bay Area died in Milpitas. And she caught COVID-19 in January, we guess. She got over it. She then died from a heart attack, a 38-year-old woman. She died from a heart attack like 3 weeks later. So
yeah, that's,
as it pertains to the athletes, and I'll defer to Sarah next, but or Dr. Edwards, mm-hmm. but these people, when you're not out of the woods, like even weeks later, you can come up with, and that's how a lot of the young people are dying or becoming injured. It's because of that developing clots elsewhere. Well, sorry, Sarah, what do you know?
I've heard the same thing, Greg, and that's what I've heard from a lot of the intensivists and intensive care doctors that are taking care of a lot of COVID is that they're getting them through the lung part. If they survive the lung part, many of them are having a heart attack, are going to this cardiac arrhythmia, their hearts are dilating, they're getting cardiomyopathy. All of these things are devastating for a young person, and many of them leading on to death 5 weeks, 8 weeks out, 3 months out. So that's where I noticed the NBA addressed this because I was curious, like what happens if these guys get sick while they're playing, and then they're making them go through this rigorous cardiac testing. Again, this virus is so new. We don't know should they even be allowed to return to sport? Are they at risk of having a cardiac event while they're playing? Like, we do not know that. And the athletes, you know, I'm sure terrified, you know, it's scary for them because obviously this is their livelihood, but you know, is it worth dying for? I'm sure most of them would say no, you know, they'd give it up in a heartbeat. Yeah. No, No, it is affecting all these different organ systems, just like Greg said. So the heart stuff is actually a little bit scarier, and the risk of stroke down the road.
Yeah, stroke.
Yeah, because they're getting blood clots at a very unusual rate, and then it's attacking their micro vessels in their body. So it's not the flu. You know, this is not a flu. Anyone who says, oh, this is just a glorified flu, absolutely not. We know that it's way more than that. It's why everyone's dying from it. But it's not something you want to catch. That's why I get a little upset when I see the young people like minimizing, oh, well, they're just young, they'll get it and get over it. We don't know that. You know, we don't know that for sure.
Because we talked about that, right? We didn't get into the people who get the antibody test and then they feel like they're in the clear.
Invincible.
Mm-hmm. The question is, if you've had COVID, should you be playing sports, or, you know, for the next 3 months, should you be super careful? Because you get clots when you play sports, the impact, the injuries, could that be worsened? We don't know. We do know for a fact that they're getting muscular injuries even more than strokes and heart attacks and other injuries. They're developing clots in muscles, whereas, well, you'll just have like an aching muscle for a while. But imagine if that's your hamstring or something like that. That would not be a great thing to have, you know, an unknown ischemic event in your muscle. We don't have, there's no data on that whatsoever. There's no way to know.
So, you know, Andy, in preparation for this, I talked to, you know, my old partner, who's the doctor for the Giants. I talked to one of my buddies who's the Texans doc, the Bears doc, you know, the Blackhawks doc. These are all friends of mine. And I will tell you that everyone is terrified. The doctors, everyone is like, this is rolling the dice. Everyone is extremely, the anxiety level, I've never seen it like this, where all these team doctors are afraid of what's going to happen to the athletes. I mean, our interests need to be always with the athlete. And I think everyone feels everything's pushing forward in interest of the business side of it. We get it. Like, I get it. I want there to be football. I love football. But everyone is seeing all these unknowns and just like, wow, this is really scary. Like, could these guys die? Sure. Like, we don't know. So,
Well, even on the business side, it's such a different discussion between college sports and like, if you're an NFL player, you're an NBA player, you have a very limited window in which to make all of the money that you will ever make in the world. And so I understand the players and the owners wanting jointly to proceed. It's got to be weird at the college level, where you must have players who are like, nobody's paying me.
Did you see the document UCLA put out? Did you guys see that?
No.
UCLA last week, I think it was 32 of their football players signed a letter essentially saying the protections they wanted, and that they did not feel safe coming back this soon. Mm. And, you know, they were defying all these local things that are going on. LA is obviously having a big spike of COVID right now, and that they wanted a third party medical system to come in and make sure things are being done right, because they didn't trust that it was being done right. So, it's interesting that it's the first one we've seen where the kids actually spoke up and were like, hey, we're scared. Like, this isn't okay. And, you know, if we get sick from COVID, they said, we want to be protected for the rest of our life. We want to be.
Yeah. Switch. Right. Yeah. So that's like Northwestern, where they demanded to have workers'
medical
comp,
care.
Right? You got to have medical care. Is it workers' comp? It will be in the NFL, but would it be for these athletes in college? No, they're just going to be on their own. Imagine you have a big heart attack and, you know, like become maimed another way, stroke or something. I don't know. Is that worth the risk? If I was a college football player now, I would be very leery of playing.
We also have people who are going into free agent seasons who are like, no, I'm good. I'm not going to put anything at risk over the next month or so.
Right.
And potentially derail my next contract. That's definitely occurred in the NBA. Like, one last question that I guess I would have for you guys. Like, there are a lot of athletes in the NFL, in college football, in football generally, who are not, like, if you just saw them out on the street, you wouldn't say, "Wow, that is a really fit person."
Right.
There are some NFL players who may fall into a risk factor for, at least what I understand to be a risk factor for COVID. Certainly, like, they would fit the clinical definition, I would think, of obesity, right?
Yeah,
like,
for sure.
Are those folks?
I totally worry about the linemen. Yeah, that have an extra 100 pounds on their frame. No, it's clear. And there's also, I mean, having done thousands of physicals on those guys, I mean, what do you think, Greg? 10 to 20% of the team has asthma at one time. They have sickle cell trait on the team, which is, you know.
Yeah.
And the sickle cell trait is probably something that's just not in any way been studied adequately and for COVID-19, because that puts you at a massive risk, right?
Massive risk.
Massive risk. Yeah. And right. Like every year, like at least 3 or 4 players get concerned about going up to Denver. Imagine they're concerned now. You know what I mean? So.
Right. So, yeah, no, I mean, they're big issues, and there's no answers because it's so new. There's really no long-term data. So, but I will tell you that I've never seen doctors that take care of teams so anxious, like, because it's just changing every day. And, you know, there's this push to get people back, but should we be back? Should we not? And kind of depends on where you're from and the part of the country too. But it's, I think, it'll be interesting. It's going to be an interesting season.
should we feel better about football generally? Because it is, with the exception of a handful of teams, a handful of schools, it is an outdoor sport. Like, I've become conditioned over the last few months to feel much safer when I am outside than when I am inside, especially when I am around other people. And yet at the same time, like, there's 10 people who are just actively fighting at any given moment in an NFL game, right? And the contact is close. It's almost intimate, and it is repetitive. So there's some, you know, there's some duration to worry about there. And if anybody on the field is sick, is there any reason to feel better about the outdoor sports than the indoor sports?
I absolutely feel better about outdoor sports, but not football because of the close contact. You know, they're piling on each other on a tackle. You got 10 guys or, you know,
right,
5 guys on the ground breathing on each other. That's about as close as you can get. It is good they're outside.
Except that, you know, for the fans, I think it makes a big difference, because when you're outside, yes, the wind is generally going to make a big difference in, you know, how much viral load you might get exposed to if somebody is near you. So yeah, I think for the fans, I'd much rather be outside in a football stadium than inside and in, say, for example, if it were possible, a basketball game.
I would agree with that.
I want to be respectful of your time, both of you, because you've been really generous with it so far. I'm just wondering if I can ask you guys to both either dispel or confirm some widespread worries that I have seen about face coverings and mask wearing. If I can throw a few things at you.
Sure.
We keep seeing all these video clips of like screamy folks at city council meetings and the like, right? That are worried about face coverings being harmful in some way, that they can deprive us of oxygen. I assume that both of you, when you perform surgery, wear face masks and you don't pass out from oxygen deprivation. Is that right?
That's absolutely correct. And I don't know, I do hand surgery mostly, so my cases are shorter, but I've done replants that can take 6 hours. We sit there with a mask on the entire time. And I have never heard of any staff or doctor anywhere in my 30 years in medicine having any issue at all with wearing a mask. So I think it's just absurd.
I agree. It's comedy. It's very interesting to me, this fear of the mask. People are so afraid. And
fear of the mask.
I know. And the data is clear that it decreases transmission. I will tell you, at the beginning of COVID, when there was all this, I don't know if you remember, the Surgeon General came out because there was a shortage of masks available to healthcare providers. So there was a message at first, please don't wear masks. Please don't hoard the masks, because they were trying to gather them for the doctors. Okay. And that was making me so anxious. I'm like, what do you mean we don't need masks? And even the doctors were getting, some doctors were getting sanctioned at work if they were trying to wear masks when they were in clinic because they felt uncomfortable. So that went on late February, early March. There was this messaging, even to us from our hospital administrations, you don't need a mask, you don't need a mask. That is clearly incorrect. And I think most doctors became very, were very upset about that messaging, because we were the ones in the line of fire going, what do you mean we don't need masks? Of course we need masks. So yes, we are pro masks. They do not cause oxygen deprivation.
So they're not going to overwhelm us with carbon dioxide. They are not repositories for deadly bacteria, anything like that. We shouldn't be worried about those things.
No, we wear them all day long, most days of the week, and it's fine.
I feel like you guys are downplaying the emasculation issue for a certain sort of male. Can prolonged mask wearing lead to low T, which I believe to be the leading cause of death of American men. Is that not right?
That's a new one. I've heard that one.
I'm trying to come up with all the reasons that I can imagine anybody not wearing a mask, which is clearly for the public
good.
There's
no reason to not wear a mask. And
we should somehow flip that it like helps you have a stronger erection, and then maybe guys can wear it. You could switch that.
Right. And we should, let's just start some like absurd.
Start it from opposite, Dr. Edwards says.
You know, like, yeah. Let me throw one at you, Andy, before we get off. What about the street free agents and, you know, one whose last name starts with a K? Are people going to get brought onto rosters just to, particularly in a like quarterback, you can't afford for, you lose two quarterbacks, your team is done, right?
So. No, it is a really good question. I hate to reduce a big and important conversation in a time of pandemic to like fantasy spin, right? But there is a sports conversation here, and Bruce Arians has already talked about how they're probably going to carry a third quarterback who they isolate from the rest of the team, right? Because you have this issue in the NFL and obviously in other sports, but like if they have position meetings and they have position rooms, and if this virus catches hold within a position room, like all of your linebackers can be positive simultaneously. Like your whole quarterback room can be positive simultaneously. So this is definitely, I mean, we see what MLB is doing right now, right? They've expanded rosters throughout the season because they know they're got like, I don't, you guys can tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like I feel like COVID positivity is going to be the number one reason for missed games across almost every sport, except maybe the NBA. Maybe the NBA can get this under control in their bubble. But like in MLB and the NFL, this is going to be on top of all the other injuries that we have throughout the course of normal season. This is going to be the number one reason for missed games in all likelihood, because we probably Seems have like to it. Require people to sit not only when they have it, but when they've been exposed to it. So we're going to see, the number of players who are going to make appearances in NFL games this year, especially if we get a full 16 game season, as we all hope we will, it's going to be a crazy number. I don't know if it's going to be 30% more. I don't know if it's going to be 50% more, but there are going to be a lot of people who are probably going to have to miss some games just due to exposure to the virus. And that, yeah, for sure, we're going to see a lot of blast from the past names. We're going to see maybe the Canadian Football League is going to be raided. Like this is going to have an arena league look to it sometimes, I fear.
Yeah.
I agree with you. I think they're going to need like a whole nother string of people. And what's interesting from the hospital perspective, again, at UCSF, we are setting up very strict regulations. So we have half the sports team works while the other half is out. Half the trauma team works while the other half is out. And we try to minimize contact to the staff because we can't have the whole trauma team go out. So the NFL needs to think the same way. So what you're saying is great. You know, they need to have another quarterback or probably split the first and second string teams completely and have them sleep in different places. Have them
separated.
Keep them separated. Because if you're right, if one quarterback gets exposed, if Tom Brady gets hurt, then you know, you have to have your backup, you know, ready to go and not exposed, you know, in a different location. So they need to think about that. It sounds like they are.
Street free agents, right? So those guys should be very careful to stay home right now and be ready,
right?
Because this could be a huge opportunity for folks. And Kaepernick, someone's got to pick him on a team. Come on. Like, if you're going to pick someone off the street at some point, get him early.
Yeah, honestly, given, you know, a little bit of editorializing here, but given where Colin Kaepernick sits in terms of like various all-time lists and what he has already accomplished in the league, it shouldn't take a global pandemic to get him on a roster, I guess is how I feel.
Right, exactly.
Well, you both have been super generous with your time today. You both have presumably limbs to operate on and fix and people to help. So I'm not going to take any more of your time. It has been a total pleasure talking to you both again. I appreciate your thoughts, not only on injury risk this season and COVID this season, but also clarifying some points on mask wearing, which is just, again, people, it is for the public good. Do it. Mask up. I want to thank you both again. Folks, that is going to be it for another Yahoo Fantasy Football pod. Huge thanks to these doctors. Huge thanks to our producer, Raghu, who is doing this for us on a Sunday. You guys can follow us at Yahoo Fantasy. We would encourage you, as always, rate and review the show. You know that drill. Also, check out the Yahoo Fantasy Baseball podcast with my good friend, Scott Pianowski. Check out the Yahoo Football pod with Charles Robinson, Therese Paler. Really appreciate it again, doctors. That is it. Until next time, we are out.
It's no secret that our world has been interrupted. A World Interrupted is a daily podcast telling stories of coronavirus and its impact on the economy. So subscribe today on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.